This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for my favorite part of the week. I hope it's yours. Time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And with me today is my collaborator and colleague, Layla Mutin, who is a registered dietitian and also possesses a master's degree in the field of nutrition. Together, we do our weekly Q&A with Layla for Intelligent Medicine. How are you doing?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, thanks for that intro.
Wow.
How are you?
Well, you know, I have to reiterate for some people who are newbies to this podcast, you know, who you are and what you do and what your qualifications are. But you're eminently qualified to team with me to field questions.
Thank you.
And, of course, we've got a lot of questions this week. Mm-hmm. So let's get right to questions.
Okay. We've got an email from Terry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, several years ago, Dr. Hoffman interviewed an electrical engineer on the subject of EMF in the environment. The interview mentioned devices that could be plugged into the home and help to cancel out EMF pollution. Do you still believe that there is value in using these devices? This is from Terry.
So, the issue of EMF pollution is controversial. But I do believe that there's something to it. It's just an area that is poorly defined by research, but it's also a hot button issue. It's kind of like GMOs, which I think, looking forward to a question that we're going to be answering today, is a source of controversy. You know, there are all these waves that are permeating our environment. We know that they're active waves because when you put down a transistor radio next to your device, you hear static.
Yes.
And so imagine the effect of, you know, having your device close to your head or even sleeping in the same room with a server that can, you know, send, electromagnetic waves permeating your environment. Also, you know, what weirds me out sometimes is I'm sometimes looking for, a Wi-Fi, you know, and I'm sitting in my apartment trying to get a Wi-Fi, and I live in a big, tall high-rise here in New York, and I see there's like 25 different Wi-Fis that my phone picks up on.
Yes.
And then I find mine, and I, you know, I sign on to mine.
Because it's secure.
But it suggests that 25 different devices are projecting electromagnetic waves into my apartment.
Right.
And my device has a way of sensing that. I don't sense that, or maybe I do at some subtle level. Maybe it's doing something to me. So it is a concern. Now, then the next leap of faith is, do these devices really neutralize EMFs? And that's, you know, also controversial. Can you buy a small device that you pay $39.95 for and you hang it from your neck and it kind of wards off all evil, like an amulet, you know, like a, like, you know, one of those,
garlic necklace.
Garlic necklace, or one of those things, the hand of Fatima or something that people sometimes wear, you know, or something to ward off the evil eye, whatever. You know, are they more than just symbolic? Do they really work? Certainly, the people who offer them, there's a theoretical basis for how they work. Do they really work effectively to neutralize whatever physiologic insult occurs with these waves? And the answer is, I don't think there's been much research to clarify that answer.
Yeah. Well, I make it a point at home. We have wireless, as most people do at this point. It's easy, right? Connectivity wirelessly to printers, which are over there, and I'm way over here working on my computer. I do make it a point, however, to never have these devices in the bedroom.
Okay.
The cell phone is never sitting on the night table. Yeah. It is out there at the charging station in the foyer, along with where the wireless is, along with where one of our offices is set up, so forth and so on. So it's out there. None of that is...
Do you take the precaution of turning it off at night?
We haven't been lately. We used to do this, but I've not been doing it simply for convenience sake.
Yeah, right.
It's like a big reboot.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, oh, well, here we go. I don't want to wait.
Ideally, one would do that, but I don't do it either.
Yeah.
The other thing I do is I do device reading. I take the device in with me into bed and I read it, but I set the device with the night reading feature.
Good.
So that it's got the blue light filtered out. And also I use a white on dark background and set to the lowest level.
Good.
So that the light is not keeping me activated at bedtime. And I have no problem falling asleep. You know, just I can read it, put it aside.
And go to sleep.
It's part of my nightly ritual is to do a little reading of, you know, usually something not scientific or nutritional, but fiction, you know, and or, you know, some nonfiction history.
Too many people are looking at their devices in the ultra bright mode. I personally can't stand it. This is something that happens, like my husband will do something with my phone and hand it back to me, and suddenly it's very bright.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do? No, I had to tone it down or something.
Right.
But this has become, this is like going to be the new blindness. It's just so much blue light.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it.
And it creates headache. It creates, you know, it's like staring at the computer screen without having
a special form of eye strain that occurs with it. Also, you know, there are concerns that people who do this, they develop scoliosis, you know, because they're just kind of
like this.
It's a small screen. It you know, the print is really tiny, and they, you know, people just push their faces right into the screen. And so that there's this all kinds of orthopedic problems being developed by it. But, you know, it's an area of interest to me, but I have to say that I'm you know, just like many members of the public, I'm... I hear the claims.
Yeah.
I have concerns.
I do too.
But I don't know how to put them in proper context. And I also don't know the best way to mitigate these problems other than to be completely off the grid. And I know that there's some people who are bona fide sufferers of electromagnetic sensitivity.
Yes.
And they're considered weirdos. They're considered, you know, it's actually sometimes labeled a psychosomatic disorder.
Yeah.
And there may be a psychosomatic component, is that people who are highly sensitive may, you know, once they have some odd sensations, that those sensations amplify to the point where they become phobic. But something's going on there.
Something is going on.
Yeah.
You
know,
strange.
Echoing Buffalo Springfield, you know, in 1971 or something, you know, 1966. There's something happening here.
Yeah.
It ain't exactly clear.
Right, right. Is it still the case in hospitals where you have to turn off your cell phone anymore because you might activate somebody's...
Oh, pacemaker.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, there is this, and I first saw this on an episode of Homeland, a pacemaker assassination. Is that I think the head of the CIA had a pacemaker, and somehow they managed to hack his pacemaker and give him a heart attack. So what they've been doing is they've been testing pacemakers to make sure that they are not hackable.
Because, remains to be seen. Okay. Yeah, so the electromagnetic pollution, really, the keep it out... I don't stand next to, I just wrote an article about microwave safety, about using microwaves. I was comparing it to what the FDA standards are, and another very balanced article by Chris Kresser.
Yeah, who which is very respect.
Good.
I think Chris, by the way, does a very fine podcast and VCast with some great information.
Right. So I don't stand next to the microwave or within 3 feet of it as it's operating or anything like that. I don't microwave a whole lot of things. I reheat maybe the leftover dinner from yesterday or a cup of coffee. But that's, you know.
Okay. Well, you know.
But we don't know. We truly don't know.
Yeah.
Do we?
Well, saying I don't know is one of the least satisfying responses to a question that our listeners may expect us to give.
But right. A safe way to use your cell phone. I rarely hold it to my head. I will use, a lot of people are using the earbuds. The earbuds. So that's probably a better way to go.
As opposed to the Bluetooth.
Yes, which is the same as putting the cell phone up to your ear. But as far as devices, I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you, Terry, for your very, very thoughtful question.
And we'll stay on the beat on that as the new developments occur. I'll try and bring on board guests because it's always a fascinating topic.
Yeah. We have a question here. Oh, I wish I had a name. I don't have a name. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I live in South Africa and I was diagnosed last year with mitral valve prolapse. I also have IBS for years. I'm a 40-year-old male. And I can understand what is going on, and especially I feel worse now. Every day there is something different. Many tests, many labs. I was even told that I suffer from a condition called hypochondria.
Right. Yes. And that's, and lest you worry that you have yet another serious medical condition, being labeled a hypochondriac is the oldest thing in the medical book, which means, of course, that you're sort of making it up. It's not real. This is a person who's highly sensitive.
Yeah.
Mitral valve prolapse is a condition that is a, technically it's a valve condition of the heart. Mm-hmm. And it's a benign condition. It's thought to not be a problem except for maybe 5% of people who at some point may require a valve replacement later in life because of the progressive deterioration of the valve. So it's thought to be relatively inconsequential. It used to be necessitate antibiotic prophylaxis before dental procedures and minor surgical procedures, but they've gotten past that, and that's to the good that people are not being unnecessarily dosed with antibiotics every time they get their teeth cleaned. But I wrote a book on the subject. I recommend it highly to people who have mitral valve prolapse. It, the book resonates so much that I get people from all over the world writing me and praising the book and asking me questions. And this sounds like a typical sufferer of the highly sensitive aspect of mitral valve prolapse. Mm-hmm. He's got an autonomic nervous system that is awry. Irritable bowel syndrome is sometimes a hallmark of an autonomic nervous system that is very sensitive,
you know,
sensitive to visceral sensations, very attuned. Mm-hmm. So,
I wonder, or I would bet.
And these people tend to be more anxious.
Yes.
Because they're
burning through their magnesium.
They're also
He's probably deficient in magnesium for starters.
They're just generally very tightly wired.
Yeah. You know. They startle easily.
Yep.
Something like that. I think this person needs magnesium at the very least. CoQ10, the IBS, if that's something that he was diagnosed with.
I mean, we tend to distinguish between organic IBS, where there's inflammation or there's infection or there's dysbiosis or there's allergy, versus functional IBS. Functional means that it's part of the brain-to-gut circuit where there's a certain amount of, and it's not just about anxiety, it's about how the person is wired.
Yeah.
And that they may be wired to have a higher likelihood of cramps, pain, urgency, constipation at times. So, these are patients who are challenged to treat.
Yeah. Wow. So
one of the things that I would recommend for people who have these types of symptoms is go to the website of Elaine Aron, who I actually have known for over 3 decades. We're trying to bring Elaine back on to the program. I think I sent her an invitation to come onto a podcast of Intelligent Medicine because she originated the term HSP, the highly sensitive person.
Mm.
She's got an HSP website, which I recommend to people who are beleaguered by these types of symptoms. And what she recognizes, and I think it's valid, is that about 5% of the population fall into this category. And they're often labeled cranks or hypochondriacs, but actually they are just highly sensitive people, and they require a lot more TLC, more regulation, sometimes low-dose medication to keep things in check. They got to keep their blood sugar in check.
Yes.
They have to make sure that they have a stable environment. and you know, routinized sleep and exercise, and they can adapt to it.
They can adapt
but
to it.
They will always be sensitive.
Wow. Okay. Best of luck to you in South Africa.
And we appreciate the feedback from our South African followers. You know, people who, you know, this, and it's interesting when we look at a map, and sometimes we can, you know, we can see where the subscriptions are coming from for our newsletter. We don't have a signature on everybody who listens to our podcast, but the newsletter, we could see people from all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, from .de, which is Germany, and .ru, which is Russia.
.nz.
NZ, right?
New Zealand. Right. Oh, my. Okay, we've got, oh, this comes all the way from Israel. This is Irwin writing, asking about genetically modified organisms, GMO. These are products that have been improved or changed by selective breeding. Plant breeding has been going on since the time of Mendel and has grown more sophisticated as more genetic information is discovered. For example, if a farmer wants to produce apples that are redder, larger, sweeter to serve the needs of the public, he'll do selective breeding to accomplish this. Remember the hybrids of earlier times which produce better fruits and vegetables? GMOs are simply a continuation of those plant breeding techniques, Irwin says. Why is there so much opposition and hostility?
And, you know, that's a familiar argument that's brought up by people who support the use of genetically modified organisms. And what they're saying is that, you know, there's always been an effort to improve on agriculture. And, you know, from the earliest times when they first wanted to breed, you know, sheep that made better wool, you know, they'd make the observation that if you mate certain sheep, you'll get certain qualities. And, you know, this is an ancient practice, but that was mating, and that was done. That was done in a way that is governed by the laws of nature, which are gently guided by human intelligence. What we have now is sort of a quantum leap in our ability to create things. So we can create, you know, anything. We can create, you know, a you know, a carnivorous, a giant carnivorous rabbit that, you know, could, you know, you know, terrorize the countryside, you know, if we wanted to. I mean, it's just about anything we could do. And so, this, it's different because we're not just mating, we're selecting for certain traits, and we're doing,
And we're doing it on the level of DNA.
And we're doing it on the level of DNA, which
across
is
across species,
which is a human manipulation. It's not a just a mating, you know, natural manipulation. And you know what is more concerning is some of the unforeseen consequences of that. So let's say, you know, on the one hand we say, well, why would you want to eat a GMO apple? It's not natural. Well, it's natural. I mean, it grows naturally in the environment. But what, you know, why would that be a problem? Well, it's got genes from various plants that are reassorted in a way that is kind of a quantum leap from the way it would happen in nature by accident or even by human guidance. And so what are the consequences of these admixtures? Are they wholesome? Are they, you know, do they correspond to our DNA in terms of their nutritional value? Do they create the potential for new allergens? We don't know. Do they interact in some unexpected way with our intestinal flora, creating microbiome changes? We don't know.
If you take the pesticide ability of one plant and inject it into another, like corn, BT corn, you're creating almost a new species of insecticide. What does that do to our microbiome? If you take the DNA of a peanut and put it into a tomato, if a child with a peanut allergy eats that tomato, will they be reacting to the peanut? It's interesting.
It's unclear. And, you know, some of the resistance to that is, you know, resistance of like on the level of, you know, if men were meant to fly, you know, we would have been given wings, you know. And so this is quite unnatural. You know, we do things in technology that are, you know, pretty unnatural, but is this, you know, since this is tampering with our basic biology by our, virtue of our interaction with certain foods, you know, is this wholesome? And the answer is we don't know. And I'm not saying, for sure that there's a problem with all GMO products, but I think we need to exercise real caution. So the other aspect of it, of course, is let's say the products are edible and wholesome, but what they do is they engender some unforeseen consequences. So, for example, the glyphosate Roundup-resistant produce. What happens is, the familiar weed killer, I used to use Roundup on my lawn, and I noticed that if I got a little too aggressive, I'd burn out a big hole in my lawn. I'd be trying to kill that weed, but I'd create like a lunar landscape around the weed. And it was like, oh my God, look, now my lawn looks horrible. What they did is they developed Roundup-resistant crops. So you kill the weeds, and the crops are resistant to the Roundup, so they grow, and the weeds get killed. Okay, so what the net result of that is you end up putting much more Roundup on the products because you can do so with impunity. You won't kill the crops. Yeah. And then now we have from the verdict from the World Health Organization, and a lot of people don't trust the United Nations, who are they to tell us what to do?
Right.
But the World Health Organization says that it is a probable carcinogen. And, we have reason to believe that glyphosate is toxic, is dangerous from animal studies. So, what are we doing? Maybe we should slow down and evaluate that before we take this great leap. Using the logic of people like this pragmatic Israeli who says, hey, it's all the same. We've been doing this for millennia, and this is just a little more sophisticated technique.
Right.
And it's animal breeding. Well, no, it's of a different order. Mm. It's taking it to a different level. And, another way to look at that is like, we used to do matchmaking of parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, look at that splendid looking guy, and look at this handsome looking woman, and the matchmakers in traditional societies would say, they'll make great children.
Yeah.
So let's put them together, and we'll even arrange a marriage, and they'll make great children. Okay, that's one level of, doing that. But what if we were to say, let's take the traits from the guy, and let's take the traits from the woman, and we'll inject them into some, test tube egg, and we'll create the perfect progeny. Wouldn't we have pause about that?
Wow.
That actually is the one of the plot lines of Brave New Worlds by Aldous Huxley, how he envisioned in the early 20th century that they were creating super babies through genetic modification.
Mm.
And we now actually have the ability to do that. We do it to plants. Can we do it to humans? Do we want to do that?
I want my baby to have blue eyes.
You mean we want super tomatoes? Do we want to use the same technology to make super people? Is that advisable?
Hmm. That's a great way to frame it.
Yeah, and then maybe this Israeli would say, oh, well, let's not go so far as to say, for my tomatoes, it's okay, or my watermelon, or my salmon, but when it comes to people, we'll draw the line. Well, no, it's the same technology
that
does that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well said.
Enough on that subject.
Wow.
Because, look, reams have been written on the subject of GMOs, and, I also distrust people who are reflexly against any form of technology. They don't, they don't trust their microwaves. They don't trust their Wi-Fis. They don't trust, everything is a problem. Look, we make certain, we can also go back to a pristine environment, and die of, disease
infection
in the wild or exposure to the elements,
A spider bite.
Yeah.
A snake bite.
But, we make certain trade-offs for modern existence. But, this is a technology that we need to really keep our eye on.
Yeah.
Before it gets the better of us. All right. We need to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and we're taking your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com, and we'll answer them on a future episode of Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.